MMA Roadshow, episode number 438. My name is John Morgan. Cold Coffee is not with me at the moment because he is home chilling in Las Vegas. Meanwhile, I'm here at the New Yorker Hotel, but I've got a replacement. Some might even say an upgrade. Some definitely wouldn't. It just depends on how you feel. It is Ben the Bane Davis who has made his way to New York to help out with his PFL coverage. What's going on, my man?
Pumped to be here. Absolutely agree. Polarizing. Some people have their own opinions.
Some people have already turned it off. Some people have absolutely already turned off the podcast.
Maybe they didn't even turn it on. They saw the name and title, and they're like, we're going to skip this roadshow, John.
Never even gave it a start. Well, good to have you here, my man. Obviously, you and I have crossed paths a couple times over the years recently covering events, and then we actually got to call fights together as well down south in Columbia. So the paths have been a little bit intertwined lately, so it's been good to hang out. And now we can actually finally sit down and do a little podcast.
Chop it up, baby. Chop it up.
Chop it up. Chop it up. All right, listen, you just got into New York, right? So what's your schedule? Because I guess I came in a little bit early. This has been a fun week. We'll get into that in a minute. Been a fun week for me to do this stuff. I guess I kind of came early, so you didn't really necessarily come late.
I got here, and I opened my timeline, and I go, whoa, fuck, they're on top of the Empire State Building. Yeah. You know, that would have been fun. So I did flex here in Queens, New York on Friday, flew back for UFL 3 down in Mesa in Arizona, and then now I'm back here. So it's been ping-ponging across the country.
Keeping the schedule busy. I like it.
Absolutely.
So flex, you do, you've done quite a bit of those, right? Do you do all their events, or? As many as you can, basically.
As many as I can. Yeah, scheduling-wise, sometimes there's conflicts. But since February, you know, doing the play-by-play. And then a little taste of ring announcing there last time out.
Oh, yeah. Did you volunteer for that? Or did it just work out that they needed somebody? Or how did that go?
Combination of demand and interest from both sides. I think that the original guy that we had.
Demand, he says.
I mean.
The people were calling for
they
it.
They said, we need the Bane ringing throughout Melrose Park Stadium. You know, I had been interested in it. I think at this point, you know, you got to be a Swiss Army knife in the current landscape of MMA. And I've never done it before, felt like I could. And the original guy that we have wasn't really interested in doing the full card. I mean, it's a 24-fight card. I can't blame the guy.
Good Lord.
Yeah, so I did, I think, the first 10. We had a BJJ tournament as well going on. Okay. So, you know, because we didn't have enough fights, John.
24 wasn't enough. You're like, hey, wasn't enough. We got a judo competition that we're lining up. That's great. So you did it, but so how did it go? I don't think people realize this, especially, you know, ring announcing. I mean, commentating is one thing. It's a lot of talking, right? I mean, It's like 6 hours or 5 hours or however many, depending on the broadcast. I don't think people realize, like, that is one thing. You can lose your voice doing that. But, man, when you're ring announcing, you're trying to punch it up even a little bit more, right? I mean, obviously, Bruce Buffer is the standard in the industry, and nobody's going to be Bruce Buffer, but he's kind of set that standard that you got to kind of bring that energy. So to do both at the same time, I got to imagine the voice was a little toast that night.
You know, the cords got some work in. You know, the cords went on a marathon that night. And the comparison that I think I can draw is like a long distance versus a sprinter. You know, it's kind of the same muscle group, but there are some differences. And I don't think I anticipated how challenging that would be. After probably the eighth or ninth, fight that I was introducing and then trying to head right back into the play-by-play, it didn't affect me as much as I thought. But there was some tangible effect. And, you know, admittedly, I did have some goofs inside there. I flubbed up here and there, and I think there were a couple announcements where, I will say, the voice cracked a little bit.
Right.
Puberty's still, I'm going through it, John. I'm still going through it. The balls are dropping. So it was a great experience, though. I think that another crack at the ring announcing would be a significant increase in quality, but it was fun. I liked it.
So you said something about being a Swiss Army knife man, and I think, honestly, that's really actually good advice for anybody trying to get in the game. I always joke, I'm so old at this, like when I started doing this, like sports writer was actually a thing. Like you just wrote. Like that's not even a job anymore. You know what I mean? Like now you gotta do audio podcasts, you gotta do video, you probably need to do some photography, gotta do the producing. You can't just shoot your stuff and turn it over to somebody. You gotta be able to handle it all. So I think that's really good advice to people and just being as well rounded as you can, because you know, a lot of people want to get into this field. You know, there's passionate fans, right? And they want to be in the space, and they have an idea of what they want to do. But I think very rarely does the career path go like exactly as you foresaw it. You know what I mean? So I think that's good advice to people. Like, hey, man, if you can leave yourself open to being, you know, a little bit of everything and trying new things, even if you're like, oh, I don't really know how to do that, but
why not?
Try.
Figure it out. You know, I mean, if you're not trying new things, you're not growing. You're not evolving. And the reality is not every promotion is going to need maybe this or maybe that. So if you can provide a bit of everything, then you go, listen, you don't need a play-by-play, but you do need a ring announcer.
Right.
Hey, you got a ring announcer and a play-by-play, but you don't have a sideline reporter. You know, I think like that is the best thing to, I think, express to people is, like, if you can do a bit of everything, then whenever a promotion needs something, you can absolutely qualify for it.
Yep. So let me ask you this, being the Swiss Army knife that you are,
yeah.
But where is there, like, one passion over anything else that, like, okay, I'm doing everything right now, I'm getting the experience, I'm making the connections, I'm doing all those things, but where I want to end up is in this role.
Yeah, gay porn's my calling, man. I think that genuinely down
on
the line,
your way, my man. On your way.
Hey! No, I do believe that the play-by-play is the best application of my skill set. I think with my acting experience and sports broadcasting in high school and then just the oration skills that I think I have, it all comes together in that position.
The oration skills will help in the gay porn as well, by the way.
That's true. That's very – hey, got to use the mouth, baby.
Okay. Now more people have definitely
they're
turned
gone.
It
we
on.
We got like one listener, and he's in Kansas City. No. No, I think I do believe that the play-by-play is really what speaks to me the most and what I'm passionate about and what's connected. But, you know, I recognize how difficult that is. I know you kind of have that same perspective as well with it. It is a very hard – you know, the UFC play-by-play role, that is a almost impossible job to get.
Right.
So I'm prepared to, at some point, kind of face the music a little and go, maybe I have to change and do X, Y, or Z. But at the end of the day, I mean, being here, being in the industry is you can't complain.
Yeah, I dig it. All right, well, listen, we're going to talk about UFC 292, of course, up in Boston. Obviously, that's the big card of the weekend, but pretty big card here as well with the PFL. The playoffs are getting underway. This Friday, they will continue next Wednesday. By the way, are you staying for both cards or how's that?
I am. Yeah, here till
stay all the way through.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. You get a lot of time here in New York then. All right. Let's talk about this. So, first of all, I guess I'm sure everybody wants to know. Hey, what's the scoop, guys? Y'all are on the ground there.
Boots on the ground, baby.
PFL Bellator. What's going on? How's this all playing out? I know you just got here kind of late last night, so you haven't had to.
Yeah.
What I'll share from when I'm talking to people is that nobody really seems to know, and it feels like everybody is kind of like, yeah, sounds like something's happening, but even like off-record conversations or like little hints, you're trying to get a little information, I'll just be honest, it just kind of sounds like nobody really knows exactly what's going on.
No black or white in this one. It's a lot of gray, I think. You know, same thing, the rumor mill has been just pumping out things, but I haven't really heard from the fact mill, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
So I've heard a lot of things, and when I really speculate and think about the PFL purchasing Bellator, and again, I love the idea from one perspective, but devil's advocate, I don't know, you know, because that's going to be a whole overhaul of what PFL is at the moment, and I don't think that, you know, the whole value proposition is this tournament,
right?
It's the $1 million, and that's the big, fresh, innovative thing that we do here at the tournament. With Bellator, you absorb the roster. You can't really do that effectively.
That's my biggest question. So, like, it's weird because on the one hand, you're like, all right, well, look, you got a lot of sharp minds here. You got a lot of sharp minds there.
Yeah.
You bring them together. Maybe the product's a little bit better. You combine the rosters. And that's that double-edged sword too, right? Because on the one hand, like, oh, well, if you bring the rosters together, think of the matchups we can make. We can put this guy against that guy. That's amazing. But at the same time, that's one less place for fighters to compete. And the fighters are always saying, and it is good. I mean, the more competition that's out there, the more people they potentially have bidding for their services, the better, right? Because you've got more options on the table. So you hate to see one of the options go away. And maybe it would be replaced by another option. Maybe that just opens the marketplace a little bit.
Yeah.
So from that aspect, I'm a little bit torn on as well. But what you said, and I've said from moment one when I first heard this deal that it was a possibility, and people started talking about, I said, okay, let me sit back and think. Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? What would it benefit? The clear advantage is the roster. But because of the way the PFL format is set up, and I like the format, it's something different. It's not just, hey, we're trying to do UFC light. Like, no, we're doing something completely different. You can only support so many athletes, right? And now, I think the immediate thing would be, I guess at least if you had that number of athletes, that you could do every weight class instead of, like, picking and choosing some weight classes. So maybe that would help a little bit.
But then it's a $20 million payout. Like, the operational expenses
sure
go through
too.
The roof. And I think that is the additional concern here is, you know, PFL is still a young organization, still finding the footing, I think, you know, on the financial statements, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a lot of money that's going to be not only the purchase but the continuation of the athletes. And if you are doing that tournament, you crack open every division. It gets wild. And so I think that there is a lot of potential and opportunity, but it's going to be change any way you cut the cake. And I don't know if all that change is good.
It's interesting. Yeah, and you know, I've heard some people say, well, the PFL can just do like normal cards, whatever. There's no way they're going away from this format. Like, this is their differentiator.
Bread and butter, baby.
Yeah, and they're setting up these regional leagues, which, by the way, I want to say that the regional organizations that they're setting up, I'm sure a lot of people are just kind of like, yeah, whatever. And in fairness, it's been really hard to watch PFL Europe in the United States. I mean, they haven't necessarily nailed the distribution from what we understand. I think next year the Middle East League is going to be up and the Africa
Australia,
League, I think,
Africa,
or something.
Yeah.
I think those are both going to be up next year. I really honestly think that's brilliant because, you know, first of all, look at this PFL Europe event in Paris that they've got coming up. It's, if you look at the lineup,
great card,
solid card. It's sold out. I think it's like a 6,000 or 7,000 seat venue, if I heard correctly. That's impressive. You know what I mean? And it's good. And I really think this is good because when you're talking about growing the brand and you're talking about growing the sport, having stuff that is in prime time wherever those regions are, you know what I mean? That's you know, I love the idea of, you know, you've got Dan Hardy, a well-known guy in that market, kind of heading things up over there, so the people can relate to that instantly. I love it. When they first announced that was their plans, I'm like, dude, this is going to be a hell of an undertaking. How are they going to pull this off? But it seems like they're getting there. So I really do think that what they're doing there is going to help the sport as a whole. It's going to help PFL as a whole. But it just goes to echo what I'm saying. Like, they're not going to just scrap all that all of a sudden and just be like, yeah, well, we got all these athletes, so season, let's just do regular fights. Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of the international expansion is you could take a couple, 2 to 3 matchups from a Bellator and PFL guys and toss them on as, like, showcase for all these international shows, and then there's extra added interest. You've got those fighters bringing their own fan bases to then the new talent in these contender series-style shows around the world. So I think there is a way to do it. Again, I think my process just rolls back to, man, it's going to cost a lot.
Yeah.
You know, that is steep.
I'm interested. I'm definitely interested in following along and how it goes. I think there's potential, but I don't think it's necessarily like an automatic home run. But I don't know if it ever is. I mean, you know, and I've heard people say, well, what are they, you know, what about they just run both brands and they have two companies? You know what I mean? But, I mean, we've seen that, right? Like the UFC and WEC, they tried that. You know, they were like, oh, we'll run this and these will just focus on these weight classes. But at the end of the day, like, then you're trying to educate consumers on two different brands, even though you're doing the same thing. You're almost competing. There are benefits in terms of, like, if you have two different brands, you can sign two different TV deals. You know what I mean? Like, I got one over here. So you just doubled your revenue. But I just think you run into these issues where, like, you're trying to educate the consumer and you end up competing against yourself. And I can definitely tell you from back in the day, like, when the UFC and WEC were rolling around, like, the WEC people always kind of felt like the, you know, like the lesser.
B-team.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're not prime time.
And
that's, I will say this, to put another edge to it, is we don't know if PFL is the right buyer. Like, one, or maybe Dana goes, hey, fuck it, you know. That would be the ballsiest move, just to go, I'm going to absorb my competition, and you guys can't do anything about it.
So funny. This is one thing, I was talking to Cole Coffey about this recently, is that, like, you know, all the antitrust stuff and everything that's going on.
Yeah.
I'm sure, because on the one hand, I'm sure the UFC doesn't necessarily want to see these two companies come together and maybe create a bigger company that becomes more of a rival, et cetera, et cetera. But on the other hand, I'm sure they're sitting back and going, like, please buy them so that as we're in a court of law, we can be like, oh, we did what that was so terrible? We purchased up the competition? I'm sorry.
I've heard that one before.
Have you seen this headline today in the news that this just happened? So, excuse me, tell me again what we did wrong.
Let me off the hook here real quick. You know, like, it would be a funny one to see. But I don't know. I mean, either way, it's an interesting time to be in both the industry and a mixed martial arts fan. Because, again, if they do merge, then we do get kind of a real solidified number two in the market. And I think with that antitrust and so many questions about, you know, some fighters, I think I heard it's like 1,200 fighters in that case.
1,200, yeah.
That's kind of a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot. There's a potential lot of money that could change hands. Still years away from getting resolution there, but some money that could change hands and possibly some contracts, the way they're formatted and that sort of thing could all change. So, all right, let's talk about the card. So, by the way, it has been a fun week for me. They actually asked me this week if I would come in and host a media, you know, that was
– Yeah,
I got
yeah.
to do that, host a little media thing. That was fun. I guess – I don't – it was called a media day face-off.
Like a group interview.
But then it felt like it was set up kind of like a press conference, but it wasn't a press conference, you know what I mean? But it was actually pretty cool the way it worked out, because it was like just us in the room, and so I got to ask a few questions like in person, and then and I know you were one of the journalists that was on the line as well, and then we did like kind of this virtual thing where you guys were dialing
in. I was one
of
the media members.
Exactly.
I'm not a journalist. Come on.
You were one of the media members there. But it was kind of cool. I enjoyed doing it. It was kind of cool.
Was that the first time you've done something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wow.
And yeah, they asked me if I'd do it. They just wanted to try something. I'm like, yeah, I'm game for that. Like you, man. I'm just I've done this job for a long time, and so if there's new things that I can do, I'm like, yeah, that sounds like fun. I'll do that. And then you mentioned we got to take the tour of the Empire State Building, which was super cool as well because they asked me to tag along. And I was into it. I mean, obviously, like, I've been to New York a lot. I've seen the sights of the Empire State Building. But still, it's fun. Like, let's just go and hang out and do it. I mean, if somebody's going to take you somewhere, like, go do it. What else you got going on the day? Sit in my hotel room, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do that. But then it was super cool because we got to go to the very top, and then there's, like, it's not a hidden floor, but there's, like, a private, like, when you go to the 102nd floor, which is the highest observatory, there's, like, a little metal cage. And there's a ladder in there, like, and you just walk up the ladder, and it's like a little crow's nest perch or
an
whatever. Really small. So apparently, like, you can't buy tickets to get in there. You can't. It's just invite only. It's VIPs only, and that you have to go. So we got there, and then you go out on the so you go up there, and then you step outside. And I'm gonna be honest, I'm not like afraid of heights.
Yeah.
But there's something about being 103 floors in the air, and this is not like the big safety cage around you. Like there is like a little hand railing. But
You could go.
Oh, you could go.
You could go.
You could go real easy. And it's funny. It's funny too, because even like I shot a couple of videos, but I don't know. I was even like nervous. Like, what if I drop my? Yeah, like if the phone falls out of my hand and it's
someone's
like,
dead. Oh my god. Yeah,
it's going 100. So I don't know if you saw the video, but Maurice Green was like, while I was shooting video, he was sitting there and okay, so Maurice and Hanna Fajeda, the two headliners, and we'll talk about this fight in a minute, they were both there, right? Yeah. They're towering human beings. Like, I was joking, but it was true. Like, at the media thing, they were sitting in chairs, and they were taller.
Oh, my God, I knew. That was the first thing that hit me. And I was like, come on.
How am I standing up, and I'm looking at these two guys that are sitting down, and they're still taller than me? Like, so anyway, so there's this railing, and when you go out there, like, even on me, it's only, like, waist high or whatever. Yeah. To those guys, it's like at their knees.
Yeah,
it's across their thigh. And Maurice Green's like, I'm on top of the world. And it was funny. And it was cool, you know? And like, I was like, that's cool. And then he like leans over the edge to like look down. I'm like, what are you doing?
Could you imagine if the PFL main event is off because Maurice fell off the Empire State Building? That'd be fucking bananas.
I actually had the same thing. And it was, okay, so let me, all right, so I'm filming him leaning over, and in the head, it goes through my head. I'm like, this dude might be about to fall over right now. And then I thought, so I should probably keep filming.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe this is going to be the last recording.
I was like, should I turn this off because this is going to be utterly insane if he falls over? I was like,
the journalist in you was like, I'm going to keep rolling. I got to capture.
Oh, that was crazy. So we got to do that. That was fun. That ended up being more fun than I anticipated, so that was good.
And for all the Empire State Building enthusiasts out there, if you want to do reach that hidden floor, become a Mixed Martial Arts Media member, and the PFL will certainly bring you there.
That is the message here. That is really the lesson to take out of it. That is why I got into this. I was like,
to be on the Empire State Building.
I was like, man, if I play my cards right with this MMA game, I'm getting to the secret floor of the Empire State Building. There's no question. It's taken me a while to get here.
It only took 20 years, you know.
Took me a while to get here, but it's done. And in fact, with that, I'm ready to announce my retirement. I'm done.
Wow.
Everything's been accomplished. And thank you, guys.
You know what, John? You changed the game.
All right, let's talk about this card. You were at Media Day today. We got to talk to the top eight fighters. Of course, the heavyweight semifinals are going. Hanna Fajeda and Maurice Green are in the main event. The other semifinal is the number one and number four seed. Number one, Dennis Goltsoff. Number four, Jordan Heiderman. Interesting collection of guys. It's not matchmaking. This is just the way the points work out. But the way it came together is pretty interesting. You got Hanna and Maurice again, 6'7 versus 6'8. I mean, these dudes are massive. Hanna Fajeda, a dangerous dude. Like, I don't even mean just the hands. I mean, it's just a massive dude. Meanwhile, Maurice Green, a little thinner, you know, not quite as muscular and jacked up as Hennen, but training with John Jones for several years now, and really is coming in saying, look, I'm taking this stuff seriously. I just haven't really taken it seriously 100% for the first time in my life. I'm doing so. Told a story today about, right, like, never really lifted weights. His excuse was always that his arms are too long, so it was just kind of hard to do.
Yeah.
Whatever, which, by the way, that's just coming up with an excuse. Like, arms are, I mean,
physically, I just can't.
Yeah. What else is it? But then he said John Jones, who has an actually even longer reach, even though he's a shorter guy. We all know the famous reach of John Jones. Was just like throwing up 320 pounds, and Maurice was like, oh, well,
guess I don't have the excuse anymore.
Excuse is gone. So he started lifting weights a little bit, and he really talked about the mental side of just having John Jones in there, which, you know, we've heard, you know, John, he said, look, it's just amazing. The dude grinds. On the days he doesn't want to be there, he's still there. On the days that maybe he's not feeling it, He puts in extra work. You know what I mean? So, anyway, I think on paper this thing doesn't look like it's going very long, but what do you think about the matchup and anything you took out of talking to those guys today?
I think, yeah, to echo that, first round is probably going to be where this one ends. I can't imagine two finishers. And kind of on both separate sides of a coin, you know, Maurice Greene, you would look at him and go, oh, that guy can knock out a lot of people. But he's, you know, kind of deceptively a submission specialist.
Right, yep.
And getting the rounds in with Gordon Ryan recently kind of tells me where his headspace might be at coming into this is, mm-hmm. you know what, I know Hennen is going to be a big threat on the feet. Why not I try and mess around a little bit? And the one thing I loved hearing from Maurice is that when he really reflects on that last fight with Ante D'Elia, he went, you know what, I had juice in the tank to use, and I didn't.
Yep.
And, you know, losing that one, coming into this off of a loss, it sounds like he took the correct lessons from it, because everything's academic, right? And Maurice Greene, I think, is going to come in here and looking to really put some exclamation points, some style, a little bit mm-hmm. of flair. And I don't know, I think that Hennen Ferreira is... he's used to finishing stuff so quickly. And
right.
I mean, again, identical twin brother of Denis Goltsov in Hennen Ferreira.
Oh, we're going to talk about that moment?
Oh, dude, no.
So, to peel back the curtain a little bit, Bane went to ask Hennen Ferreira a question today, although he was looking at his Denis Goltsov notes, and so he asked the Denis Goltsov question that he had prepared, and the translator was just like,
Ed Lima, baby. He was like, what are you doing?
He's like, that's not him, bro. He's like, that's just the wrong guy. And it threw you off your game a little bit. You didn't come back with another question.
No.
You were just like, I'm done.
Truthfully, I didn't have any for Hennen. That's why I skipped ahead in the notes, because it went directly from, you know, one guy to the Denis ones. And I feel so dumb because I Googled Denis Goltsov,
right.
And I'm looking at a photo of him, and then for whatever reason, I still go, oh, that's him. I don't know how I did. Hey, the turtlenecks sometimes get a little too tight. That's all I'm saying. The blood flow is not there. But either way, main event's going to be fun. Like I said, it's going to be a finish. I think a striker versus a grappler. But both guys on the feet can do some damage. And I don't know, Hennen is also great on the ground too. So it's a well-rounded affair in the marquee matchup.
Yeah, it is. Hennen, a huge favorite, by the way. Two big favorites in the heavyweight fights. Actually, gosh, man. Yeah, Larissa Pacheco's a massive favorite as well, which makes sense.
What's
sister the
line?
There. So Hennen and Denis Goltsov are basically both -750.
Oh my God. With
Larissa Pacheco a -1,000, which is insane to see. Those are big numbers. But you're right. I do think the one thing that you pointed out as well, that Maurice pointed out, is look, like Hennen is a really good bully. But if he doesn't get you done, if you can survive it, he kind of wilts a little bit. And that's what he's expecting. But the problem with that is you got to get past that initial surge. As I said, Denis Goltsov is a huge favorite as well of Jordan Heiderman. I like the spirit of both of them. You know, Goltsov came in, first of all, just saying, look, you know, this is my fourth time in these playoffs. It's time. Like, I got to get there. Like, I'm sick of this. And it was funny because my last question for him was, you know, obviously you're fighting for money, $1 million. I mean, that means something. But how much would it mean for you to win this thing? And right back in perfect English, like, but he's like, I'm fighting for the championship. You know, it's like, the money's, he's like, I need to win this thing. Meanwhile, Heiderman, you know, he's making some noise. You know, he's undefeated. He had a failed run on the Ultimate Fighter. And he said that really showed him a lot. It taught him a lot. Made him realize, oh, okay, there's levels to this, and I need to change. And so he made all the changes, and here he is. And that is what's cool. And I've said this before, and I'm not just saying it because of here, because I've said it all along. When the PFL came out with their format, I was like, all right, like, it's just going to – okay, was this what gimmick is this? But ever since it's played, like, I like it. Like, I like looking at
it's
the
unique.
Standings. I like the fact that people can just come in, earn their shot. You win. Nobody can stop
you. Jesus Pinedo? I mean, come on.
Amazing.
Like, we don't have stories like that in other promotions.
Yep.
But the thing about me – and this is why I cracked open the question to Jordan about Tuff, because you're kind of following a similar pattern in frequency of competition, staying on weight, and always constantly – training. Like, I think that's prepared him really well for this PFL format. And, you know, he's 7-0 as a pro, but I think he's like 9-0 as an amateur. So he's been around the block a couple times. But Denis Goltsov, I mean, like you said, -750, that kind of checks out. This dude is a monster.
Yep.
And I think, like, in the neighborhood of 40 professional fights, 30-plus wins, and Jorgen De Castro, 18-second knockout of him, which is difficult to do.
It's a tough dude.
You know, don't call him the Mad Titan for nothing.
It's a tough dude.
I don't know. I think it's about time for Goltsov. But Jordan Heiderman, like you said, can certainly shake it up.
I like what Goltsov said, too, because it's so spot on. Somebody else was asking him, like, you know, what is the difference in the experience? Like, how does that impact? And he was like, man, just when you've been in there as much as I, like, things start to slow down a little bit, right? Like, because it's such – we were just talking about this recently. I mean, it's – I think we were talking about maybe with RDA in his case, Sean. But it's – you know, it's – mixed martial arts is so chaotic. But when you've been in there, you know, for hours legit, and it's it slows down a little bit. Now you can see things. Now you can anticipate.
Yeah.
Now you know what's going on instead of just like –
There's that nerves, the tenseness of it. And again, Jordan, first season in the PFL. Dennis, really veteran seasoned in this format. It really is hard to bet against him, which I guess is, you know, why he's a fucking huge favorite.
It is very hard to bet against him. The odds makers have said that as well. Larissa Pacheco, we'll say the women's, obviously, amazing story last year, you know, upsetting. I've found this storyline interesting all week. Now, again, this doesn't have any impact whatsoever on the actual X's and O's of the fight, right?
For sure.
But Larissa Pacheco last year facing Kayla Harrison. She's 0-2. She's already lost twice to her. She's a huge underdog. Nobody gives her a chance. And what happens? She wins and she gets $1 million. Olena Kolesnik.
Same
situation.
Yeah, 0-2.
She's 0-2. She's a huge underdog. Nobody's giving her a chance. So, that's a storyline.
The hypothetical, the narrative we can push. And that's what Larissa said, basically, is, you know, sure, maybe it looks that way, but it's an unfair comparison because the performances are different.
Right.
The competition is different. And I think that there is some validity in Larissa ending, because that was the question I had. I'm like, listen, you see the parallel. And she's like, no, it's unfair because we're not the same. And it is difficult to believe that Elena could get it done on this third outing, but it was hard to believe that Larissa could do it last year.
Yep.
So it that narrative, even if Larissa wants to downplay it, is really firmly in my mind.
So it's such a weird parallel. She's a low-key savage, by the way, Larissa Pacheco. Like, because I did an interview with her. Actually, I don't even know if this is going to come out, but another thing I did with the PFL was I did a sit-down dinner at a churrascaria with Larissa, and they filmed that. We did like an interview.
Well, in Spanish or English?
No, in English.
Okay.
And it would be Portuguese, by the way.
Portuguese, lo siento.
So we did that, and we had translated. But it was cool, and they kind of wanted to test this concept. And so I don't know if it's going to get produced and distributed or if they were just doing it internally, but they were like, do you want to come do this? And I'm like,
yeah, I'm here.
Churrascaria in an interview? I'm like, man, let's do it. But she kind of delivered that. So I kind of, because I had a similar question, she delivered a real similar line to that, and it's like kind of low-key savage, like, yeah, that's not a comparison. Like, I'm going to prove we're different people. So it's pretty interesting to see. Elena, though, by the way.
What a story, too. I mean, the Ukrainian background and representation of Odessa is – because I've done two interviews with her this year, and, like, it is just in her veins, you know. And I think that she recognizes all of the problems that she had in those first two fights with Larissa. And, I mean, I think she's in Vegas at Extreme Couture.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, really good bodies to be getting rounds in with. And I think we're going to be seeing the best Elena Kolesnik. But that's really the ultimate question is, will that be enough to beat Larissa Pacheco?
It's tough, man, because it is a difficult match for her. You know, it's funny, and I didn't even realize this. Maurice was pointing it out to me. Actually, when we were on that Empire State Building trip. He and Larissa were on the same season of The Ultimate Fighter. So they were both in the house at the same time.
Oh,
and he's
really?
Like, and now seeing her all, you know, he's like, I'm so proud of her. And, like, seeing, like, she's gotten so much better from when that time. You know what I mean? He's like, I'm so impressed with her. So that was pretty cool. She's so crazy, man. Just – every time I talked to her, it's like, got to the UFC when she was 20. And, oh, by the way.
Andrade and Jermaine Duran.
Yeah, how about you face two champs coming off at 20 years old? Yeah. And, oh, well, now we're done with you. See, how about that?
So. It's fucking stupid. I was looking through Wikipedia, and I was like, "You're kidding? Those were her two UFC fights?
Isn't that
ridiculous? Literal champions? Down, like, yeah, come on.
At 20.
Wow. At 20? God, what was I doing at 20?
It was like last week. Yeah. What are you talking about? You're calling flex fighters. Yeah.
It was so long ago.
Last Tuesday.
It's night and day.
So ridiculous.
Talking about tough, though, and I don't, you know, we've still got some main card matchups, but I have been eager to mention all week Caitlin Neal. Kat is similarly coming off The Ultimate Fighter, and I believe she beat Kat I can't pronounce the last name, Koroginis?
Right.
Koroginis. Really emphatic fashion, and I think she's got the personality to be a completely holistic star for the PFL.
I love it. Since you brought up The Ultimate Fighter, did you watch The Ultimate Fighter all this year?
I was tuning in for like the first 7 or so weeks, just so I could tweet out immediately the results afterwards.
Right.
But yeah, at the semifinals, and once Connor basically got swept, kind of lost interest. I know it's Cody Gibson and
Bracatona.
That
so that'd be matchup. Yeah, the last one aired last night. I watched it all. I watch everything. That's just me. I'm just a weirdo like that. So I watched it all. That is the final matchup. It was funny because there was like they didn't show any tension between the two like at all the whole time. And then the final episode, Cody's like, they're in the kitchen and Cody's just like
jawing at each other.
Yeah, and Cody's like, you know, Brad, you know nobody likes you, right? Like, so like nobody here likes you. And Brad's like, no. I think there's some people that like me. And he's like, nobody, bro.
Dude.
Nobody.
I was like, wow. Jeez, a little high school, a little middle school type, you know.
So we got some drama of that matchup. Obviously, don't get much time to go through it, but I think they were at the media day in Boston today, so hopefully we saw some interviews come out of that. So that was interesting. It was funny, too, because I think a lot of people were, like, waiting to see, like, I am not very hopeful that this fight between Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler happens in December. I'm not saying it's impossible.
Slow chance.
I understand that he is a very popular and wealthy man, and that, you know, the popular and wealthy people get certain special rules applied to them, but I really do believe going through the 6 months of USADA testing would be better for everyone involved. Just so there's no questions.
Yep.
I honestly believe if they do grant this exemption, I think a lot of people already had their doubts about USADA, right?
Yeah.
That, to me, is going to be like a nail in the coffin, right?
Final.
Like, I told you guys, they're just – you know what I mean? So that's why I believe, for the safety of the program, like, it's best for them to go and have the 6 months. But anyway.
Well, that's why I look at January 2023 and July 2023 and go, man, we could have already been done with the 6 months, you know?
Exactly.
Like, why didn't we get this out, you know, but whatever.
So ridiculous. But anyway, so a lot of people are looking forward to, like, well, maybe they'll announce it on the last thing of the show. And it was just like – it's like, all right, the finals are set. It's this and that. And they're like, and then it's Aljamain Sterling and Sean O'Malley. He's like, and Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler set their eyes on a future date. I was just like,
at some point down the line. Like, wow, really getting me anticipated.
Remember how we told you they were going to fight? Still going to happen sometime in the future.
It will go down.
I thought that was pretty funny. All right, so anything else to add after you mentioned by the way, Amber Leibrock, I thought she was awesome today too, man. She came in, a little bit of a chip on her shoulder. She's like, hey,
sure.
I don't like what Marina's been saying about me. We asked Marina about that, and she's like, don't care. Like, just the way I feel. So that's what I'm telling you. But also, the one time she got emotional, Amber was talking about the
teaching
bond
kids.
That she has with teaching kids. I wanted to put that clip out later. We were doing some stuff. I'm going to put that clip out because I'm a huge proponent of kids doing martial arts. And I'm not saying that every martial arts trainer is as committed as she is, but I can tell you that, like, my kid has had some really good coaches over the years. You know, he's trained under Justin James, he's trained under Roxanne Modafferi. Some great people, and they've all had that care. You know, like, I know a lot of coaches teach kids just because, like,
it's a paycheck, maybe.
It's a paycheck, and it's how they pay their gym fees, it's how they make some money or whatever. But I still think, damn near to a T, everyone I've seen, like, does have bonds, like, does love doing it and does love, like, instilling that passion, you know what I mean? And, she got emotional about it, just talking about, like, being a good role model and, like, helping relate to these kids, and I thought it was pretty cool.
I think, her connection is potentially really can be drawn back to her own upbringing, you know, and the difficulties that she faced. And I'm not going to pretend to know everything about Hayward, California, outside
right.
of the, you know, longest Battle of the Bands
By the
competition.
Way, when you said today, Hayward, California, well known for the Battle of the Bands, I would have to say no.
Hey, that's what Google told me. If the world's largest search engine says something, JM, I'm going to, you know, follow it. But I think that really is why Amber got really emotional about it, is because she's going, I wish I had this when I was younger. And now she's able to give that to people. And we see that a lot. And it always is going to get someone, tearing up and feeling it. And, you know, I think that she's right to have a bit of chip on her shoulder. Marina has been very dismissive, and maybe rightfully so. I mean, 6-time world sambo champion, like, difficult to bet against.
Right.
But Amber Leibrock's been there and done that, and she's kind of swam through the valleys of her career exceptionally well. I mean, losses to people like Megan Anderson, losses to, again, Larissa Pacheco last time out, and then still getting this semifinal opportunity. I think that if anybody is going to upset Marina and prove Marina's thought process wrong, probably Amber Leibrock's the only person I could do it here.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see how it plays out. I will not be here on Fight Night. I am actually leaving tomorrow morning to fly back to Vegas.
James a fraud.
But yeah. I'll be back. No, it was interesting. So my week, this week has been up in the air for a little while. I think I'm allowed to say we were trying to do a grappling event in Boston, CFFC.
Yep.
But we just we came across some operational difficulties. And ended
they
up
heard
not
the
happening.
Bane wasn't available, and they went, you know what, might as well just not have the event.
I don't think you want to be on the CFFC grappling mat anytime soon, my man.
Hey, December.
Are we all healed up, by the way?
Is it 6 weeks. You know, Doc said it's 100%. Everything's aligned. The bones healed well.
There was no surgery or anything, right?
Thank God, no. Just the boot.
Just had to wear a boot for a while.
Hobbling around.
That was rough. Well, I'm glad you're okay. Yeah, it was weird that night to see your limp getting progressively worse. I'm like, oh, like at first, I was like, oh, he's got a slight
working
little
right.
limp.
And then, at the bar afterwards, I was like, oh, boy.
The adrenaline has worn off, and there is a problem right now.
Yep.
Well, glad you're healthy and that sort of thing. But, yeah, so we were going to do that, but I was never going to be able to be – in Boston on fight night because my dad had a work trip actually in Vegas planned for a long time, and I only get to see my dad like once or twice a year, so I was like, yeah. I was always going to fly back. But I was going to be in Boston. That fell through, so I ended up coming here to New York instead. So I will not be here for fight night. I'll let you enjoy the fight night, and I'll be back early Monday morning, and I will be here for the Wednesday fight night,
yeah.
And we'll close things out. So, have to talk about UFC 292, of course. Again, I was originally planning on being in Boston, covering all the pre-fight coverage. Wasn't going to be there on fight night, but I was looking forward to it because I got to say, man, I've done a couple interviews with some other media members. I'm about as excited for Aljamain Sterling versus Sean O'Malley as any fight on the
big fight.
This to me just has everything right. Like as far as it's a clash of styles, right? You know what I mean? Like, both well-rounded martial artists. But, you know, you think of Aljamain Sterling, you think of the incredible grappling. You think of Sean O'Malley, you think of the incredible striking. Now, each can dabble in the other realm, of course, but that's where they're best at, right? Then you have just this whole thing of, like, Aljamain is the champion that really hasn't necessarily got the respect. Sean O'Malley is like the superstar that really hasn't fought
proven
a whole lot of high level fights.
One
yet.
Top 15 win, and it was a little controversial.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So there's that. And then, of course, you know, Aljamain doesn't mind talking a little bit trash. Sean certainly, I mean, they got differing styles, but they both like to throw things out there. And then there's just all the impact in the division, man. You got Merab Dvalishvili waiting in the background. Corey Sandhagen's out there as well. Henry Cejudo's in there. You got to keep it. On your dog. There's always there, you know what I mean? And so there's so much. And again, maybe Aljamain, I think win or lose, I think he's kind of echoed it a little bit more this week, but I've been saying this for the past few weeks and months even. I think this is Aljamain's last fight at 145, regardless win or lose.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I'm pumped up. And I guess, you know, I'm bummed that I won't be there at cage side, but I guess I get to watch it from the comfort of my couch or whatever. I'm hanging out with my family, which isn't bad.
Can't hurt. You get to hear the commentating finally.
Get to hear the commentary. But I don't know, man. Are you in the same boat of being like, I mean, am I making too much out of this, or is this just like a legit badass fight?
I think that's the proper amount of inflation you could give to that main event, because Aljamain Sterling is the most underappreciated, overlooked champion that we've had in quite some time, and he's strung together a deceptively great title reign. I mean, wins over Piotr Jan, he's got the Cejudo win, the Dillashaw win. Like, those are names that if you told somebody maybe in 2017, you'd go, Aljamain did that?
Right.
So I get that there are question marks, and there might be a couple asterisks here and there, but ultimately this is giving a lot of shade to Jose Aldo and Conor McGregor in the sense of, if Sugar Sean O'Malley cannot end this quite early with a beautiful left, I think Aljamain is going to just dominate. I mean, the wrestling is second to none, and I don't want to draw analogies to past fights, but Corey Sandhagen, Aljamain Sterling, I could see it playing out quite similar. Because if Piotr Jan can take you down six times and look like a fucking D1 Iowa wrestler,
right,
what can Aljamain Sterling do against you? And I had the luxury of speaking with Tim Welch not too long ago, and I think that they've got the best mindset possible, and they recognize where this fight could go wrong. And Sean's been echoing, hey, it's about the small errors. I can't make these little mistakes and give him an inch. And I think that's, you know, best physically, best mentally, Sean's coming into this. But like we talked about with Elena and Larissa, will that be enough against a true problem on the mat in Aljamain Sterling? I got the Funk Master. I don't want to make predictions.
No, I do too. That's the way I'm leaning as well. But you know what I love? Because sometimes you look at a fight and you just, in your head, you're just like, I'm 90% sure it goes this way. You know what I mean? But, you know, maybe. And this. But, I mean, I totally see Sean landing something. You know what I mean? Like, he's so dangerous. He's so
Thomas
accurate.
Almeida.
Power.
Yeah,
and that was like Thomas Almeida was like the man, you know? So, I mean, I could see Aljamain getting clipped. But, again, for all the things you say, in terms of stylistic matchup and in terms of, man, the people that Aljamain Sterling has fought against.
Ridiculous.
Unbelievable. I lean Aljamain, but Sean is as dangerous as they get.
I want to add the addendum. Not Thomas Almeida in the sense he was the man at that point in time, but the problems that and the mistakes that he made. He was getting wily on the inside trying to grapple, and Sean went bop, bop, bop.
Yeah.
I could see Aljamain eating a clean shot, getting a little bit more, you know, desperate or making a problematic move, and that same sequence can occur. It's the best equity for Sean to get it done. But, I mean, you look at my DraftKings and, you know, don't listen to me.
Not highly successful there?
No, man. I'm burning through the wallet.
That's funny. All right, the co-main event. So I could literally do an hour talking about that fight.
Yeah,
I just,
of course.
I'm sure everybody that's on the ground in Boston is going to give you all the coverage. They were at the media day. They'll be at the press conference.
They don't need to listen to schmucks. I mean, what are we talking about? We're up here in New York.
We're not there. We're in New York. I am fired up about that. And I'll tell you what as well, the co-main event, and it's getting zero attention, and I understand why. I mean, first of all, it's two non-English speakers, so there's not like a whole lot of, you know, clips and tape and all that out there. Secondly, I think a lot of people just feel like, look, I mean, Zhang Weili is the champ. She's dominant. She's going to destroy Amanda Lemos. And I get that sentiment. And at the end of the day, if you're asking me who I'm picking Zhang Weili. But I feel like Amanda Lemos is a sneakily bad I don't want to say a bad matchup, but at least just challenging. I mean, Zhang Weili likes to strike. Guess what? Amanda Lemos will strike with you. She'll throw down. You want to grapple instead? Got some pretty good jiu-jitsu as well. And the power and the size that she brings to it. Zhang Weili, but I'm a little bit more interested in it because I think most people are just like, what's next? You know what I mean?
I think because they haven't really paid attention to Amanda Lemos. They see that standing arm triangle by Andrade and they ride her off. But again, over her last two fights, submitting Michelle Waterson and then TKOing Marina Rodriguez, not everybody can do that,
that's
folks.
Right.
And I'm on the same train with Zhang Weili. I think two bouts with Dama Yunes, two bouts with Yan and Jacek, just steamrolling Esparza. There is no reason to really question Zhang Weili coming into it. But I think that Amanda Lemos is going to give her at least hopefully a stronger challenge than people would assume.
That's kind of the way I feel. Like if on Saturday night Lemos pulls off the upset, I'm going to be a little bit shocked, but I think I'm going to be less shocked than most people. I think she is a dominant force out there and people that aren't really just giving her the credit. The winner of this fight, I feel like, number one, the winner, if Zhang Weili does win, I think they're going to do everything they can to give Yan Xianan the next fight and try to do it in China.
You know, like, Shanghai, maybe, or
you know what I mean?
Who knows?
Like it's just such a big financial opportunity. And but if for some reason Lemos wins, do you want to see Tatiana Suarez in a title fight already? Do you think she needs, like, one more?
You know, my answer is why not?
Forget it. Get it there. Yeah.
Just why not?
I've been talking about this since she came back, and I was always super high on Tatiana Suarez. Man, I mean, when she first came in, straight up, I was like, that girl is going to be a champion.
Deservedly,
like,
there's no
way. Absolutely. And then the layoff, and it's just, I was saying this, like, I think you just, there's so many fights, and there's so many fighters, and there's so much going on.
Yeah.
I forgot how high on her I was. And then she comes back and does what she does. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's why I was saying she's going to be a champ. So it's weird. Like, I kind of want to see her get next, especially because I feel like, man, all that she's been through and all that she's had to endure, like, I feel like, I don't want to say deserve, but I don't know. Just I want to see her there, and I feel like it's inevitability. But I do feel like if Zhang Weili wins, I think the UFC is going to try to go China.
And to the credit of the upsets that we've seen in 2023, I mean, Valentina Shevchenko and Alexa Grasso can speak to the fact that somebody that a lot of people count out, hey, they can get it done. And like we've talked about, Lemos is a finisher, period. Yep. So, you know, as much as we're on the Zhang Weili train, in the event that we see a little bit of an upset, I'd go, that's 2023, baby.
Yeah.
That's what we should expect by now.
100%. Like, you definitely picked Valentina Shevchenko against Grasso, right?
No, I got Grasso by round 3 sub, actually. I called it perfectly. of course, man. I mean, so what's funny is I was calling a flex event, and I recall we wrapped up, and that was the same night that Jones and Ciryl Gane went to war. Two-minute war. Went to a skirmish, really, for Jones.
Went to war.
They had a tight grudge match, a battle, really.
Back and forth.
We wrap up the main event at Flex, and I waltz my way up into the stereo garden. I grab a Corona. I turn around. I see Valentina getting choked down. I'm like, oh, my God.
Crazy.
Wild.
So this is the reason I ask is, you know, obviously we're a month away now from the rematch.
Yeah.
I feel like in the rematch I'm picking Valentina again. Is that dumb?
I don't think it's dumb. I think it really just boils down to the fact that Valentina made a dumb decision, a mistake that Alexa Grasso capitalized on beautifully. Now, I'm not sure how old Valentina is right now, but here's the scary statistic that I think might move a lot of bettors and people that want to pick. Champions don't often get the belt back. You know, it is a real tough task for people to get it done. And
35 is the answer, by the way.
35? That's how old she is?
Yep.
I think I might go with Grasso again. I think UFC Anoche is going to go to Alexa Grasso.
I like it. I do like the fact that they're doing that Mexican independence. I hope that becomes a thing. Yeah, the UFC Noche or Noche UFC?
Something. But it's at the Apex.
No, it's at T-Mobile.
Vegas?
Yeah.
Still in Vegas. Yeah. I mean, come on. Let's move this shit down to Mexico City.
Yeah, well, that's – site fees, baby. They want those site fees. If they're not getting the event, I mean, that's yeah. It's financial. Anyway, we'll have a month to get to that. But I do think it's cool they're doing it. Ian Machado, Gary, Neil Magny, the late replacement of Neil Magny. Ian Machado, he's coming out of his shell a little bit. You know what I mean? This man has always been confident. Like, he's always been confident. He's always done interviews. But I always kind of applauded – I don't know if humbleness is the right way or humility is the right description, but right. I always thought, you know, he always said, look, I'm going to be the best. But he would always say, like, but I'm young and I got time on my side and I don't have to skip any steps. I'm getting work better every up. Day, et cetera, yeah. et cetera. And I guess finally he's just like, well, I worked my way up. We're done now.
He just decided, yeah. I mean, it's weird, the roller coaster of Ian Machado Gary coming into this one.
Sir. No, that's – you don't get to just – Machado. Are we in Barcelona?
I know. I got to have the Spaniard, pronouncing it. No, it is weird because, yeah, he comes out of the gate in the UFC and there's so many McGregor comparisons and people go, oh, we're tired of this guy. And then, yeah, you did see that kind of a 180 and people go, dude, we're all Ian McGarry, especially after that Song Kanon fight and the rebound, the recovery. And like you said, I think his self-awareness after that fight. And here he is saying, I'm carrying the card. And it's like, dude, we're right back where you started, Ian. Come on, man. You're not. I've spent a lot of time with Ian Gary at Karate Combat events, and he is the nicest guy
in person.
Greatest guy. So I just look at him say shit like that, and I go, dude, you know what people are going to say and draw from.
Okay, and you're exactly right. So I was doing an interview with a buddy of mine earlier this week, and he was asking me about that. And I said, listen, I think he just knows it'll piss people off, so let me stir the pot a little bit, and it'll get people. And I'm like, look, we actually led the UFC 292 breakdown with that. I'm like, look at that. How about that? I'm like, you're starting with this in your 292 breakdown, so it worked, right? So do you think
I think
calculated decision, right? Because if you spend any time around, he's the nicest dude ever. I think it's a calculated decision to be like, you know what, man. Let's just get people talking.
And it might be a confidence because of Neil Magny. As great as the Haitian sensation is, we know kind of the staggered results that he's had. And stylistically, I think it's more challenging than Jeff Neal was offering.
I like this fight better.
Really?
If I'm being honest with you, I like this fight better just because I feel like Neil Magny is such a proven commodity that if this one to me, like, I'm not saying that it wouldn't have been a great fight, but I feel like some of the questions we have about where is Ian Gary, like, is he really
the ceiling?
Yeah. I feel like we're – because, like, you don't run through Neil Magny. Like, I don't believe there's a single person in the welterweight division from champ to number 15 that it goes, I would smoke that dude. Like, you know you're going in there, and he's going to push you. And,
he's a problem.
He's not going to be flashy, but he's not going away. He's not going to make things easy on you. I feel like we'll get some questions. Like, I feel like we will have more knowledge about who Ian Gary really is.
And if he does to Neil Magny what he did to Daniel Rodriguez, then he hops on the mic and goes – I fucking carried this.
Yeah.
And boom. Oh. I mean, come on. There goes a mic drop moment for Mr. Machado. But I just don't. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm interested to see. I'm glad that Ian's still on this card because, again, at the end of the day, that's a gamer move.
Yeah.
At his level with what is at stake to accept this short notice change against a guy like Magny who is a perpetual problem shows a lot about who Ian is. Yep. So maybe look past the words and hopefully people can understand that this guy really is an exceptional talent.
I agree. And I think that happens a lot with a lot of fighters and fans, just like maybe they don't like a guy, so then you diminish his skills just because you don't like him, you know what I mean? But you got to respect. Even if you don't like the way he's approaching it, which, again, I think it's just
– And sometimes you have the opposite effect. Sometimes you see Merab shoot 75 takedowns, you go, oh, this guy fucking sucks. But then you see his personality and him jumping off of, high rises, and you're like, that guy's awesome.
He's so crazy. Damon Blackshear, Mario Bautista, I'm happy to see Damon, who came through CFFC, getting a second fight in 2 weeks, which is incredible.
Twister.
Amazing. Hopefully the weight cut isn't an issue because he definitely didn't take any damage in that fight, but hopefully just the back-to-back weight cuts aren't a problem. Chito Vera versus Pedro Munhoz rounds out the main card. Chito Vera, obviously, this is a big moment for him. So here's what I'm trying to figure out, because I believe, win or lose, Aljamain Sterling's gone. I believe he's moving up to 145. You got Merab there right now. A Sean O'Malley loss clears the path, I think, for Merab versus Sanhagen or Merab versus Cejudo, maybe, something like that. But if Sean wins and Chito wins, you have to put them together, right? At that point, you're like, well, Sanhagen, you're hurt, so get healed.
Merab, you're going to just grapple. We want – no offense, but genuinely.
I mean, I am Merab fan number one.
Like, absolutely.
He's a guy, actually, that I said when he came in, even though he had, like, losses, which were the weirdest losses ever, I'm like, that dude is going to challenge for a title one day, too. I want him to fight for the title. I love Merab, but I do believe if Sean wins and Cheeto wins, they will push him to the side.
Got
to
do it. And I think that that is the completion of a story that was started, I think, in 2018 between Cheeto and Sean. And for fans that recognize that was such a pivotal moment for Sean O'Malley, his only loss, granted, what was that guy's name? Andre
Sukumta.
Had him. He did have him. But at the end of the day, this is the only loss in professional mixed martial arts that Sean O'Malley has. Yep. You run it back for the title. It's just a beautiful story that we, you know, we don't see these kinds of things too often. People actually rematching for the belt. I know as much as we love to talk about the Zohan, Randy Costa, and Adrian Yanez rematching for the belt, this is the realistic play out of that. And
yep.
I think round two, dude, I think Sean and Cheeto would go a hell of a lot longer than one round.
Man, just the build up for that, man.
The
back and forth between those two, like they will have people talking. That would be fun. So we'll see how it all plays out. You know, again, there's a lot of things that have to fall certain ways.
Cheeto's got to get through Pedro Munhoz, which is really no easy task. Look at Chris Gutierrez in April, struggling with just the presence of the young Punisher. I know that he's had really staggered results, and I know Munhoz is maybe the stock has dropped a little bit in people's minds,
but he's game.
He's so game. Yep. And I genuinely thought that the O'Malley fight, I had Pedro winning that first round.
Yep.
And I thought that Sean was having some real problems with the puzzle of Pedro.
Yep.
Alliteration.
I like that.
And I don't know. I think that Cheeto Vera, if he does get slower starting and doesn't really turn up the gas pedal, we could see Munhoz get his hand raised. And then, there goes everything we just talked about.
Okay.
There it fucking goes.
It all just goes off in the ether. Tough analysis on there. Like I said, I'll just – if anybody – I know a lot of people probably didn't watch The Ultimate Fighter, but I'll just say this. You're getting two quality matchups. Austin Hubbard versus Kurt Holobaugh, Bracatona versus Cody Gibson. Those are two quality matchups. They're all veterans, of course. They're all trying to get back in. So I think we have two good, tough finales there. And then the prelim, I think everybody's going to be dialed in on the return of Chris Weidman. Chris Weidman, Brad Tavares. This one's super hard for me because I don't know how anybody in the world doesn't cheer for Chris Weidman just as a human being. He's an amazing dude. And, of course, what he went through is insane. But I just have an affinity for Brad Tavares because I'm a Vegas resident. like the dude lives, in my neighborhood. It's I literally, run into him at the park with our kids and, stuff like that. So it's just,
love for both teams.
It's hard.
That's the JM problem for the last decade, probably.
It is.
dude, I know both these guys. They're all great. And I think I was just talking about this with a guy named David Caltabiano on Arizona Family, funnily enough. And Chris Weidman's story, going from a career-ending injury 2.5 years now to coming back in a great spot on the card of a pay-per-view, like you said, you can't not root for the All-American, because at the end of the day, what that guy accomplished truly goes down as one of the top middleweights of all time.
Right.
And does the, again, staggered results of recent memory maybe sway that? Sure, but in my mind, there are few people who've done 185 better than Chris Weidman, and if he can just put a stamp on it with a win here Saturday, that's, I might be crying.
One of the most craziest moments, him knocking out Anderson Silva, man, that was one of the most, just stunned moments. I always feel bad about Anderson because I know there's so many new fans that only caught the end of his career.
Yeah.
And they're probably why does everybody think this dude is so good? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But dominant run, Anderson was on another level, dude, on another planet. And Weidman was just I remember he was a guest fighter in Brazil and we were talking to him down there. And I always use him as an example of you can tell when you talk to people, right? Who is actually confident in what they're saying and truly believes what they're saying versus somebody that's saying the thing you're supposed to say because, that's what you're supposed to do leading into it. That dude was the self-belief in the fact that he was going to knock out Anderson Silva, you could feel it. It was just wow. And I was and good for you that you feel that way, but it's Anderson Silva, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then he goes out and does it, and I was just wow. And then that was just really one of the most stunning moments of my career. And then obviously, to see the leg break that was so wild.
You were
because
press row for that, I imagine.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I could actually see the bone from where I was.
Ugh.
And it was such a not to live through these awful moments, but I was there for the Anderson leg break too. And the Anderson leg break was shocking because, again, I have this affinity to him as one of the greatest fighters of all time, at that time especially. And to hear that dude, he was screaming in pain, disturbingly so. And obviously, pro fighters who spend their entire life, getting punched and kicked and elbowed and kneed, that doesn't feel good. And you don't hear them going, ow, ow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're good. And he was literally skinny. You're so that was me. But then with Chris, when his leg broke, it was the opposite, where it was just like, I'm like, is he just in shock right now? What? I know he's talked about it where he was, like, having this mental conversation, like, and I think he's even said, like, he was already, like, planning his comeback. Like, I mean, just – which is insane.
Yeah.
But it was almost jarring in the opposite way of, like, that dude isn't moving at all. Yeah, and everybody – oh, man, it was just wild. Yeah. I hope they have a draw. I do want to point to the early prelims as well. Andre Petroski, Gerald Mearshart, a couple guys that have come through the CFSC grappling ranks. Two good dudes. But I did talk to Andre Petroski. First of all, by the way, maybe I just missed it and I forgot. I didn't realize like he had battles with addiction and is really starting to talk about it more. He said he didn't really ever talk about it much, but I'm sure they probably highlighted it and I just forgot. But
I think you mentioned the Jared Gordon. You know, he
that's what
that
he mentioned.
And I thought
that was so cool for him to say, like, man, I saw, you know, that motivated me to see Jared Gordon. And I think that's so important to just realize, like, you never know who's hearing you, man. You never know.
Yeah.
You know, you think you're saying something and, how do I help people? What do I know? Why do I bother talking about it? But you never know, man. Like, that message that you're sending, one person hears it and it helps change your life. I thought that was cool that he shared that.
And it speaks to a lot of maybe the struggles that people are still dealing with that they aren't comfortable voicing, and they don't look out to a landscape and see examples of people that have talked about it and they've gotten XYZ reception.
Yep.
So I think it's just important to be cognizant of it. And, I mean, man, props to Flash Gordon for kind of spearheading those levels of conversations at such a high platform. And, you know, and in terms of special guys and characters in the scene, Jared Gordon always got so much love for him. And
I love it. It was cool. And, by the way, Andre Petroski continues to call out Bo Nickel. I love it because he's like, he doesn't even hold back. He's like, they keep saying nobody wants him. I want him.
Because why not? You know, it's the best idea.
It's a great matchup.
And GM3, you know, I just actually, funnily enough, spoke to him a couple days ago in the because they were both on the CFFC card that
right.
I was on.
Yeah.
And I was
That's right. You mean, you guys are, you know,
I mean,
peers.
We're basically brothers. These are my guys. warming up with him and kind of seeing just the
you know, we were sharing a locker room together and you know, I was giving a couple tips. I'm like, yo, Gerald, a little more pressure on the right arm there. I think that'll work for you.
Adjust the grip. Yeah, you got a gable. I want to see an S grip right there. No, you got this. You got this. No, but like the comfortability I think that Gerald Mearshart brings, especially this point in his career, like he is so cool, calm, and collected. And I think that represents in a lot of ways in the fighting style and approach. And I don't know. I don't know how many more years we have GM3, but yeah. I hope that when it is all said and done, he is kind of remembered for, A, the people that he fought. I mean, he's taken on dogs, and B, just that personality that he is, which maybe hasn't shown as much
Agreed.
In media days or made as many waves as some other people, but dude, he's just a cool motherfucker.
He really is. All right, so since you brought it up, sharing the locker room, going through the warm-up. I mean, I was with you in the immediate aftermath, but obviously there was a lot to process at the time.
Sure, yeah.
What was it like in the locker room as you're getting ready? Because, you know, I mean, if we're being honest, I mean, you knew this was an uphill assignment. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it was probably not going to go your way. But you're like, but I'm going to give it my all. So what was the emotion like for you, the thought process, the feelings as you were in that locker room warming up, getting ready? Ready to essentially walk to your execution, but you want to make it like the most entertaining execution possible.
You know, the dead man walking phrase is certainly something that I kind of lived that day. And Chris Daukaus, I got to give the most special shout out of all time to him. I know that he's obviously had some tough staggered results, but that guy is the nicest motherfucker
So
selfless. And, you know, I texted him Wednesday and I was like, yo, dude, like, what are you doing Saturday night? And he was like, nothing. And I didn't even realize that I texted him a week and a half out from UFC 289, which is obviously when he was supposed to fight Khalil Roundtree Jr. for the first time. And, you know, I only clicked afterwards. And he was still like, dude, I got you. Yeah, I'll come in and corner you. And so, you know, we were doing about 30, 40 minutes of warm up, just getting a good sweat going.
Yeah.
And practicing some rear naked choke defense, practicing some wrestling entries. And, you know, I think in terms of my confidence level, if I didn't have Chris there, and I wasn't confident by any means, but like, I was certainly more prepared mentally with him than I think anyone else could have. And he did ask me right before we walked out, you know, because we were chatting, I was asking him, you know, we were just catching up a little bit, and he was like, before we walked out, he was like, are you nervous at all? And I was like, yeah, you know, I think so. And he was like, because again, I knew what was going to happen. And he was like, that's okay. You know, we're gonna get through it. And
that's awesome, man.
Yeah, no, it was a really special night with him. And you know, I went in there and genuinely was forcing myself to believe that, you know, you're going to put on a show. You're going to come off the couch 5 years of not doing grappling and somehow stun the world. Like, I think I had to believe that.
Right.
Granted, I almost fell off the stage immediately after getting on, which that kind of shattered my mindset a little bit. but, you know, I think that it was a really fun experience. Obviously, I'm chomping at the bit to do it again.
Right.
Because, I don't know, I don't want to say it's low risk, high reward for me. But, again, I don't think anyone expects me to do that well. But I had a lot of fun with it. You know, those cheesesteaks, you know.
It was a good night. It was a fun night. You are actually trying to book like a striking match. Like you want a box or
I want that influencer boxing bullshit. Because again, it's the same thing. Low risk, high reward. I look at some of these guys on the Happy Punch prelims or even those Misfits main card, and I'm like, they just picked up the gloves 3 months ago.
Right.
Like, even though I don't train religiously, I've got about 5 years of on and off striking. I fight ready with Kelvin Gastelum, Cejudo, a lot of pretty good sparring partners. Bryce Logan was teaching these Muay Thai and boxing classes that I took from August to February and sparring with a lot of guys. Like, I know the ceiling that I have, and it would just be a fun exposure opportunity. Because imagine I knock someone the fuck out. I mean, boy. There goes the 13-second submission. I got to cleanse the palate, JM.
So true. That all of a sudden, there's a different highlight to look at. No. Awesome, man. All right, well, listen, you want to plug any – you got multiple – Flex Fight Series you're working with. They're based here in New York.
Yeah, based out in Long Island, Patchogue. I got APFC, which we've got another event coming up on September 3rd. Just signed a dealio. Unsure if I can talk about it. Uri Faber's A1 Combat, September 2nd. Going to be calling that one. And the Karate Combat Kumite, doing play-by-play for that. So that's an episodic series that's releasing on Thursdays, I believe. So make sure you tune in. That was the weirdest fucking commentating experience I've ever had.
Yeah, what was
dude, I don't know if you ever called shit in like a reality TV show type setting, but like we had it was dead silent yeah. on the set.
Because it's a green screen and
it's literally just a sound stage in fucking Orlando or Miami, whatever it was. And we had to like reshoot things and do some other takes. And thankfully Ross Levine, the KC middleweight champion, great dude, was my color commentator. We got through it, but it was a weird day.
Yeah.
Fun tournament, though. I mean, there are some cool storylines that came out of that Kumite, and I do hope they do it again because, you know, I like doing play-by-play.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, I think it's just like the contender series. It's just, like, tough. It's another avenue for athletes to get into a promotion, and it gives that promotion more content, more shit to push. So
absolutely.
Why not?
Good stuff, man. All right, well, listen, I know we both got work to do, so we'll go turn to that. I got to catch a plane in not too long, get home, get back to Vegas, see my family, and then I'll rejoin you guys out here. So, again, PFL on Friday night. Check it out. Then you got the UFC on Saturday night. Big, busy weekend. And for everybody over at patreon.com/TheMMARoadshow, I will have an episode over there that I'll just be recording from my couch. And why are you shadowboxing right now?
I'm just pumped at this outro.
My man Shadowbox over here, wish for your video so you can see all that. See, he's itching. He's trying to get a fight. Appreciate all the support for everybody. And more than anything, thanks for listening.